ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC Cricket Podcast time with your boys, Corb Middlemass and Ed Cowan for your Monday. Oh, we're getting closer to the return of Test cricket for our Australian national team. More on that in just a moment, but first I welcome my podcast co-host, the former Australian opener himself, Ed Cowan. Hello, Teddy.
Corby, happy Monday. Have you bought the suntan lotion?
No, I haven't
packed
seen
the togs. How's the prep going?
Haven't seen the sun for a little while yet. Prep's going okay. I've started to get my head around a few. I've even got a couple of interesting little human interest stories and some little tidbits I can give you today on our touring friends from Bangladesh.
You're going to reveal all the good stuff.
Yes, squad's out, so we'll try and upskill ourselves as best we can on who's coming and what's in front of us for these two test matches starting August the 13th. Of course, you can hear them on ABC Sport as always.
Can't wait. I'll be tuning in.
Yeah. Should we start with the Aussie squad? Let's get into it. We've got emails to get through, which we'll do on the back end of the show as per. Australia named a 13-player squad. No surprises here. I guess the only surprise is the fact that it's fully loaded. This is as strong an Australian team they can put together. So all your name brand guys are there. Jake Weatherald holds his spot as the opener, which is, talk about great human interest stories, is a homecoming for him, a guy that grew up in Darwin. He became the first sort of NT born and raised player. I know Damien Martin was born there but grew up elsewhere, to represent Australia in Test cricket, and now he gets to play a Test at home. So it'll be Weatherald and Head, Marna Smith, Green, Webster, Carey, in whatever order you want to put them in the middle. Inglis is the reserve batsman, and then Cummins, Hazelwood, Stark, the big three with Lyon, and Scott Boland as seemingly the reserve quick, at least as conventional wisdom would have you believe. But I think the interesting talking point here, Teddy, is also the comments made by George Bailey. So the quote was, "I know Scotty would never say it, but I think he's mounting a strong case that when you use the words the big three, he could be one of those." What do we read into the comments of the chief selector, George Bailey?
Is that a little plant seed, do you think? You think that's a little just test the water? Is that what you're feeling?
Well, did the order change and we didn't realise? Is Boland now a walk-up start in the best 11?
I think it's, I hate the saying, but horses for courses in many respects. I mean, Hazelwood obviously proved his fitness to a degree through T20 cricket in the last couple of months, but prior to that was obviously injured, and so who knows where his workloads are at. And so I imagine it's just a question of conditions. It's a question of understanding workloads. And I think they're the like for like. And so
yeah,
if you see no Hazelwood and you see Scott Boland and Hazelwood is declared fit, well then maybe there has been a changing of the guard.
Wow. It's that would be significant, wouldn't it? And it feels like, heading to, I mean, Inglis isn't going to play. I think it's fair to say that he's not going to be in the top seven. So the only selection intrigue now is whether Boland plays or whether Hazelwood plays.
No.
No?
Four fast bowlers.
Surely not.
No? What do you mean? You've got Webster, who can bowl some off-spin. You've got Travis Head, who can bowl some off-spin. So if you're talking about coming back from injury and unproven, bodies, Nathan Lyon is right up there.
So what, we don't play a balanced team anymore? We don't play a spinner? That's something that's worked in cricket for 50 years.
I think they would argue that even in Sydney, on a wicket that, we're all up in arms and banging our hands on the tables in disgust, they still got it done. And so who knows? I don't know what the wicket's going to look like, but you'd suggest that Cummins, Hazelwood, Stark and Boland could be more threatening to a Bangladesh team, more accustomed to playing spin. I don't know. I've got no insight and no observation.
But
all
you wouldn't
I'm
be
saying is
you
what
you've
just
so
said,
quick.
I'm not saying is
right.
Wholly the only option.
Yeah. What if it is a choice between, I mean, you mentioned that they're the like for like, they are. I can't imagine any conditions that would suit Boland more than Hazelwood or vice versa, is it? Like, it really, that's as much of a like-for-like option that you could possibly get, isn't it?
I think they are exactly the same flavor for sure.
Yeah. How would you split them if you had to pick one right now?
Oh, man, coming in cold. I'm always worried about Hazelwood's body. And so, you know, in this period, this is now kickstarting the biggest 12 months of Australian Test cricket in some time.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't been able to get through a Test summer for some time. He's been able to get through multiple IPLs, whether he is in total management mode. And so, yes, they use this opportunity for him to get some workloads up in the nets and bowling and ease him in rather than having to come in and play Test cricket.
I'm the other way. I'm more like in the the line from the Rocky Four or whatever. It's like that. I would have thought this is the time to roll him out and back him up. And if he doesn't get through, the chances are they're going to get the job done anyway. But you can't afford to take that same risk when it comes to South Africa or, you know, some of the more important series that are coming up. So I'm almost like, play him, back him up, and if he breaks down, he breaks down. And if that's it, they've got their answer on that front. But I would have thought this is the perfect opportunity for him to roll out and be playing these games. But I think people forget, particularly when he's absent, just how good he is when he does play and what a weapon he's been in the Test arena for such a long period of time. It's a great problem for the selectors to have. But I don't know, it just sort of snuck up on me a little bit that I thought it would just revert to the mean and the big three would play with Lyon and... Yeah, that's your lineup, and Boland would go back to carrying the drinks. But yeah, it feels like when you take those comments on face value, it feels like it's more of a conversation than I'm giving it credit for.
I think it's definitely a conversation, and I guess knowing that you've got that Test series coming up in South Africa, and to challenge what you just said, would you rather Josh Hazelwood fit and 100% guaranteed to get through that series, or having either broken down or not at his best because he's just knocked over a couple of Bangladeshis in Darwin?
Yeah. But if he hasn't got through proper Test match cricket in, what, by that time, almost 12 months, how do you take the risk? You put the team sheet in the first Test in Durban and say, right, cross our fingers and hope that Josh gets to the end.
Look, one thing I do know is to get through how many Tests? You've done the maths, but you've two here, then three, then four in Australia, then five in India, then six in the UK.
Where do we need him the most? South Africa.
There we go. So they're working backwards from,
makes sense.
Let's assume that we've got four amazing fast bowlers.
Yep.
And we're blessed with that. Why would we just pick the same 11 over and over again, knowing that modern cricket, they're going to break? And so how can we manage through that? And they'd probably work backwards and have people penciled in at this point in time in different conditions, and they've done their analysis, and they know that they've got a like-for-like for Hazelwood. And there's a world, if Cummins is injured, I think Boland and Hazelwood can play in the same Test match. So you've got three fast bowlers, two spots. The left arm obviously provides something different, and we'll just put him to one side. But I think there's a world where they've got Test matches penciled in, and whether or not Morara and Darwin is penciled in for Hazelwood or Boland, I don't know. So I guess my point is that it's not as straightforward, and I also think not as straightforward in some conditions they've shown their hand, that the spin option, that they are becoming less reliant on Nathan Lyon. I think they're unsure of his body. He's obviously been probably slightly less effective, and they haven't quite found the next spin option just yet.
Mm.
And so they're working through that.
We love talking about the... Yeah, sorry, keep going.
Yeah. I was going to say they're swapping the engine out a little bit on the spin bowling front as the plane is midair.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to put it. So these two Test matches here, can we assume that given this is going to be the batting lineup, so Green and Weatherall seemingly in, do I assume that this is the seven for South Africa regardless of what happens, or are there still a few guys that can play their way in or out?
Very hard to play your way into a out of season Test series when there's no cricket. So I think you can assume.
So can you play your way out then?
You can definitely play your way out, and they've got enough flexibility in how they're lining up as to who opens or who bats in middle order. And Inglis, I think that's why they gravitate to him as the spare batter, because he can bat all the way from three to six, and they've got enough people to kind of mix and match.
He's also great concussion sub and all of it.
And can go as the spare keeper. And so he, just the versatility and flexibility he provides is really valuable for that team.
If you're a betting man, would you say this is the seven for the first test against South Africa?
Yes.
Yep. Yeah, I think I'm probably with you there.
And ultimately, I think, Corb, and I don't mean this disrespectfully, these are like a bit of a free hit. This is a two-test warm-up series for the main game when they go to face the world champions. So, you know, I don't think missing out in the next two tests necessarily would rule anyone out. Let's get back in the groove here, fellas, and let's get peaking at the right time, which is that tour of South Africa.
And feeling good about ourselves, yeah. Najmal Hussain Shantu, who is the captain of Bangladesh, that the squad has been announced, by the way, for the tourists. So they've got a 15-player squad, hasn't been helped on the injury front. But he had some comments. I saw the quotes basically saying this is a badge of honour for us, the fact that the opponents have named a full-strength team, essentially alluded to the fact that, look, we come up against a lot of opposition in Test cricket where there's plenty of experiments going on. So I think they feel good about the fact that that the opposition are obviously going to be full-strength, obviously knowing that the challenge is going to be much harder. Hasn't been helped by the injuries that they've had on the way through. So we learnt that Nahid Rana's not going to play. This guy's been the fastest bowler in world cricket over the last 2 years. We've spoken a bit about him, obviously, in and around world tournaments. Teddy, they've got their left arm quick in Saraful Islam. He's also going to miss with a hamstring injury. And the wicketkeeper, Linton Das, has a calf complaint. So essentially, they've got three of their best team out. Edibot Hassan is also in doubt. He's on paternity leave at the moment as well. So personnel-wise, it's a bad start. And the headline here, I saw this on Louis Cameron's article on the cricket.com story, that Samia Sarkar has been recalled to this team for the first time in 5.5 years. It's the last time that he played Test cricket. He's one of four guys that have experience playing in Australia. So he's one of four players that was part of the victorious 11 for that Bangladesh breakthrough Test win against Australia in 2017. So the 33-year-old is a possible inclusion here for this Bangladesh squad. But I don't know, Teddy. I thought as a selling point, it would have been great to say, you know, Australian cricket team fully loaded up against the fastest bowler in the world. Unfortunately, we can't put that on the poster anymore with Rana obviously not making the trip.
Yeah, a marketer's disaster. Did Zimbabwe put out their full-strength team, having just rolled them by an innings and however many?
Yeah, so I'm pretty certain they did.
Okay, just checking.
Yeah. Are you saying he shouldn't be – what else are you meant to say? You're not meant to say, oh, I was kind of hoping there was – I was hoping Cummins wasn't playing and I was hoping that, you know, Steve Smith wasn't there.
Well, do you think he – if you're trying to win the series, surely you want the weakest possible opposition.
But if I said to you how you can play against, you know, the West Indies as a young emerging cricketer, like you want to play against Brian Lara and stuff, don't you? Like you want to play against the best players in the world. And for them, this is what that, like, no one expects them to come here and win. If they get rolled and they lose by an innings, does it really change anything? But they can say, hey, I played against Pat Cummins and he bowled me two seeds and I nicked off both times or whatever it is. Like, it gives you, like, surely that's a, if you're a Bangladeshi cricketer, I don't know. Surely it beats playing Australia, right, and losing that.
Yeah, for sure. What's your overs-unders on length, duration?
I've got a bit at stake in the second test, so I need that to go less than 5 days. So I'm probably, my over-under's 3.5.
For days. The series or the first test?
For the series, I'm at 7.
Yeah, I'm so far under.
You're
that.
Under?
Okay. Let the record state. We're on for a vegetarian at our favourite Indian.
Right.
You are on. That is wild. That's why I asked if you'd pack the togs. Be careful of the Crocs, though.
Yeah.
You don't want to go, you know, it's beautiful. You get the night markets. Maybe you go on a little tour down the Daly River.
Yep.
All that jazz is all yours from days, probably sometime. Day 3 at lunch, day 4 and day 5.
So you reckon, forget day 4 and 5 in both tests?
Yeah, I mean, yes, I think. Yeah. Call me a pessimist.
We're not going to get any rain, I think we know. That's for sure. So.
Call me a pessimist.
Just a couple on a few of these guys. So as I know for a lot of people, they would just read as, you know, names on paper, for example, that don't watch a lot of Bangladesh cricket. And that's, yeah, many of us, obviously, outside of a global tournament. Mushfiqur Rahim, I did say I'd look into a few of these players. Premier run scorer for a long period of time. He's a diminutive batsman, stands at 5'4". He's only 163 centimetres. This is the guy that Jamie Siddons used to talk about, saying that he'd routinely demand extra batting sessions and crank up the bowling machine as fast as it went. He's completed both a bachelor's and a master's degree in history. So he's sort of been dubbed the airport scholar, often seen, you know, travelling around the world with all these books and the like. He's played over 100 test matches, so we'll get to see him down here as one of the more experienced players in the lineup. And I think probably the best human interest story, at least in this Bangladesh team, is a guy named Mahidi Hassan Miraz, who we've spoken about him in the past. He was actually, controversially, the guy that was involved in the run out of Salman Aliaga in that recent ODI where Salman went to pick up the ball and Miraz beat him to it and threw the stumps down at the non-striker's end. This is an incredible human interest story, who's the son of a rickshaw driver. He grew up in a tiny, cramped tin shed house. His local coaches and basically neighbours helped to contribute to his cricketing journey and ended up getting his way to an academy. He took 19 wickets in his debut series against England in 2016. And the Prime Minister at the time, Sheikh Hasina, was so moved by his background that basically he ordered the local authorities to build a home for Miraz's family. He was also, tragically, one of the members of the Bangladeshi team that narrowly escaped that horrific shooting in Christchurch, obviously going back a few years now with the mosque there. But amazing human interest story. Some of the backgrounds that players from various parts of the world all come together, and we'll see them on the same field as our guys, obviously, up in Darwin in a fortnight from now.
Yeah, that's the joy of this beautiful sport. There is so much variety in the rich tapestry of these stories from different parts of the world. That's why, in many respects, we love it. That's why it needs to be protected, Test cricket, and the game needs to continue to grow in parts of the world. Not that Bangladesh needs much assistance. Between the 230 million people, they're cricket mad. So, but we love these stories. We love the Bangladesh cricket narrative more broadly. You know, this is a country that, you know, socially and politically has faced a lot, and yet the cricket has continued to thrive and evolve and improve. And, you know, in white ball cricket, this is a very good cricket team in their own conditions. As we saw, you know, over the years, they can be a handful. Not so much, I don't think, when they turn up in Darwin or North Queensland, but fingers crossed, we're in for a great series.
There's also going to be a little tour game, a three-day match in the lead-up, which will be played in Darwin. So CA11 sent up there, and squad includes the likes of Sam Constance and Curtis Patterson, Josh Phillippe, all with international experience, and then your young stars. So Jesus Wadia, who we spoke so much about, who was a feel-good story, obviously, on domestic level last summer, but Campbell Calloway is part of it, Teague Wiley, Corey Roccaccioli all playing. So we'll see who starts there, Teddy, with a couple of our emerging players in a team which is going to be led by Tim Nielsen.
I mean, one thing that we do know is Darwin is a fantastic venue for cricket. Excellent. So the more cricket that we play, either Australia A, Chairman's 11, Test cricket, let's get people playing cricket in Australia during the winter. It's awesome to see.
Ashes schedule is out for 2027. I don't know if you caught up with this, Teddy. It's going to start at Trent Bridge. We haven't had an Ashes test there since 2015. Then Lord's Edgbaston, the Rose Bowl, and the Oval to finish, as is customary. The Women's Series, again, is going to run concurrently with the men, as it did last time out in the UK. First, the one-off test match is at Headingley, and then there's T20s and ODIs finish the multi-format series there. Any surprises with the venues or the dates?
Not really. I mean, the couple of call-outs is one, you know, Trent Bridge that, you know, has been a little bit of a graveyard for Australia on the recent tours that they did play. If you think 2015, we got steamrolled for, what was it, 60. 2013, England won in a tight test. And so they've swapped out Edgbaston as the first test in the last couple of Ashes tours. That's proved a bad choice because Australia's been 1-0 up.
Yep.
And so whether that's strategic or not, you can only imagine that that was part of the thinking. And then the only kind of call out is, you know, the Rose Bowl over Old Trafford, for instance. You know, they've got multiple grounds, but, you know, the history of a Old Trafford probably for me is a better Ashes venue than the Rose Bowl.
Mm-hmm. I've got two things I just want to call out, and this is anytime cricket creates some headlines in the winter months, always a good thing. We're always appealing for that, but there's two non-stories, I feel like, which have bobbed up recently. The first one was, I don't know if you saw the headlines, that Todd Greenberg advocates for England-Australia test match in India. And I sort of thought, oh, okay, I'm interested in a little more of this. So basically this comes from BBC Stumped, where he gives a longer interview, and it's a great podcast. Alison Mitchell obviously hosts that. It's worth giving a listen. But essentially he was asked if a test match could be taken to India in a similar way that the BBL fixture's been taken there. He said, look, that's not something that we're currently planning, but I would certainly be open to it for consideration. That was the quote. And then from there, you can imagine the articles that have stemmed from that. So I don't think we should expect that that's going to happen anytime soon, Teddy, but he was asked a direct question about it and essentially said, look, I'm not ruling anything in or anything out.
Pretty measured response. The first thing that comes to mind is I think the most likely Australia versus England test match is when the World Test Championship gets moved to India and England actually qualifies. So maybe in the year 2056, we may see a test match between Australia and England in India.
Maybe.
If those two stars align.
Might only be three nations playing test cricket by then.
It might be, dreaming ahead the tri-series and everyone just turns up in India and the tri-series, the last remaining three test playing nations, they play test series in England, India and Australia and all three.
Yeah. I love that he said it's certainly open for consideration. Basically means, hey, it's not part of our plans, but if anyone from India is listening and they got a huge, big, fat check, we're open to it. We can make it work, I think, on that front. The other story that's not a story is the Australia Day scheduling, right? So January 26, Cricket Australia haven't played a game on this date previously. All of a sudden, BBL fixture comes out, bang, 26th of January, there's going to be the BBL final. And I think most people looked at it and went, okay, cool. Like there's a public holiday and there's cricket on. We'll watch the final and so on and so forth. But that didn't satisfy the cultural wars. And so as a result, then it comes out as, can you believe it? They're not playing the national anthem before the Big Bash final or whatever. Since when did we ever play the national anthem before any of our BBL games, period? I can't remember however many years into the competition. I don't think anybody has walked away from a final going, you know what, that was great and everything, but would have been better if we played the national anthem beforehand. And then because of that, Angus Taylor's responding to it. And I thought all of a sudden Cricket Australia have this huge storm on their hands to essentially about an anthem that has never, ever been part of white ball limited overs cricket or whatever it turns it to be. And just because it's back on the day, which is what people called for, by the way. Mm. It was, woke Cricket Australia and everything else. You know, they should play on the public holiday. There's a game on the public holiday and now it's not enough. What next, Teddy? They've got to wear they've got to wrap themselves in the Australian flag or whatever as they run out onto the ground. Like, it's really?
Can't keep everyone happy.
Amazing.
I mean, I'm a believer that cricket should be played on the public holiday, and I think it's awesome. And from there, I think,
and that's what they're doing.
It is a sensitive topic that needs to be trodden lightly across. But I mean, this, as you've just pointed out, I'm sure the national anthem hasn't been played at any other Big Bash final, and so can we just play on? I think it was probably in that regards a pretty easy decision to put a Big Bash game on, as opposed to, you know, if Australia plays India on them and they obviously share national days, then you do have to play the national anthem and then people are up in arms. And so maybe this is the perfect day for the Big Bash final moving forward, because it kind of appeases all parties.
Well, if you think so, I thought we were appeased. It felt like there was no tension point. I didn't hear one dissenting voice. No one came out and said, right, if it's on the 26th, I'm not playing in the game. I didn't hear any of that. And then it was like, right, where's the argument? Where's the debate that we can fire up talkback radio? It's the national anthem that's no one ever had an issue with it not being played before the final, before now. All right, now that I'll just help myself off the soapbox and back down here. The World Test Championship final is going back to the Oval in 2027. So England have the hosting rights, of course, for the next 3 years. This is basically due to the fact that Lords has had the unsatisfactory pitch rating against New Zealand. And in their own words, the MCC describing it as an underperforming strip for a period of time. So as a result, the Oval is going to host an Ashes test and the WTC final in 2027. Lords will still be hosting two test matches. They get the one-off test against Bangladesh, and of course they get the second test, as is customary, of the Ashes. What do you make of this? Back to the Oval.
It's a far better cricket wicket. And if you look at the last two finals, so the Oval, Australia versus India, and the quality of cricket that produced compared to the turgid wicket that Lords rolled out, and I think they have issues with that square. We've kind of seen it time and time again. They're almost going through what the SCG went through a couple of years ago. It's almost time to kind of dig it up or understand what's going on, because they need to do something differently. So I'm in favour of this. I know the history of Lords and the allure of that to host the World Championship final, but ultimately we just want the best venue to produce the best outcome, and I think the Oval provides that.
The latest on...
Do you agree with that?
Yep. I think you're right.
It's easy to take the opposite side to that and say, oh, it has to be at Lords. It's the home of cricket. Should be the home of the final, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep. I hope they are doing something about it, though. I can only assume that they are based off those comments, but hopefully it just doesn't get moved there and they go, oh, it's not the best wicket and we never address it or do anything about it.
There was some talk of it going to Southampton. And now that is when I start kicking and screaming. That's ridiculous.
England, our friends over at the ECB, of course. Justin Langer, as we sat here this time last week, was the raging favourite. Guess what? Justin Langer's out of the race. Apparently, he's not being considered for the head coaching position at of the England Test team. They do have a series starting on August the 19th, which is just over 3 weeks away, against Pakistan. So they hope that they've appointed a Test coach by then. Former Test players Jonathan Trott and Richard Dawson are now the new front runners, and even Tom Moody's name was brought up at one particular stage. Apparently his name was considered last time around, but it feels like that the two former English cricketers are the new favourites, Teddy, in the race for the head coaching position.
Yeah, not surprising where this is going to land. And my gut says that Trott's going to be the coach.
Okay.
And for all the reasons that we talked about last week with Dawson, who from all reports is an excellent coach, that I've experienced myself, excellent coach. But, you know, how that would work with McCullum, not so sure. So we'll see. I can't see Tom Moody doing the job. I think that would, whether they're just plucking international names to show that they're running a process of sorts.
And on the captain, looks like, again, according to the reports, that Joe Root is going to continue in the role, basically, as the test captain. He obviously filled in for Ben Stokes in the third test of the series against New Zealand. Reports he'll lead the team until at least the end of the Ashes series in 2027, until a long-term option is found. Harry Brook reportedly not under consideration. The former vice-captain, Ollie Pope, obviously lost his place in the team. So Joe Root, 64 times he led the team between 2016 and 2022. He's got a record of 27, 27, and 11 draws, which to me makes that about dead even. And Nick Miller from The Athletic wrote that he is the only adult left standing, Joe Root. I think you said this was the favoured way, Teddy.
Are you going to wind the clock back 4 weeks when you asked me the question or not? You're just going to ignore that?
No, I'm happy to have credit where it's due. I just said it was the favoured way, as you touched on.
Oh, by me. Sorry, yeah. I thought you meant the favoured by the other pundits.
Yeah.
Well, and you laughed at me and said Harry Brock's the future and Joe Root at his time.
I'd like to find that audio.
Joe Root can do it.
I'd like to think if it wasn't him, like who would it possibly be?
Oh, now welcome. Welcome to the bandwagon.
When did I say it was Harry Brook? I'm happy to go back and check that.
Well, we might need to check the tapes.
Yeah. You've picked the conventional wisdom view, and then you're acting like I was the hottest take in the world. And it's like, it's unbelievable. I called it. It was Joe Root.
There we go.
Anything to add further on that?
No. Nothing further to add. Yeah. I mean, that firms for, I think, the Jonathan Trott, Joe Root, you know, we're back to the future a little bit with that in terms of the style of cricket that they'll play, the discipline that they'll show. And it's all under the guise of a Ben Stokes comeback.
Yeah, well, that you did call.
That bandwagon too now.
No, that you did call. I'm with you on that front.
I don't know. We'll see where it goes. While we're on the UK, is the 100 on the docket list at all?
It is. I've got it down. Okay. 100. Thoughts?
Well, I haven't watched any, but I've seen some headlines around attendance being down up to 20% on the corresponding fixture. Prices have gone up under private ownership. The usual stories, and maybe people are voting with their feet. I think we can only really determine the success of this season by the end of the season, not the little data points that we have. But having said that, it's a three-week season. So, you know, effectively a third of the way through, you get a sense that people, that being the fans, and sport is built on fandom, aren't that thrilled.
As I like to say, research is not just a suburb in Melbourne. So I've been messaging a few of my English friends to essentially try and get a little sense of what's been happening over there. One of the messages I got back, which basically read, crowds slightly down on last year. Did have a sold-out crowd in Cardiff for a game a couple of nights ago. Quality of lineups much higher.
Yes, I agree with that. Quality of player is up.
Extra overseas per team. Very few international clashes at the moment with the schedule. Mistake from the mega auction, lack of local flavour in teams. So essentially players playing in all different markets, but Adil Rashid, for example, playing for the away team at Headingley earlier in the week. So that was another observation which came
through. Welcome to franchise, pure franchise cricket, folks, where Liam Dawson doesn't play for the Southern, whatever they're called, from, you know, like it is very much an open market. Yeah, in fact, not very much. It is an open market. Yeah. And so that if you're after the local flavour and the local player, it is a lucky dip.
Yeah.
Really. And we've seen that in the IPL.
Of course.
Virat Kohli doesn't play for Delhi.
Never has. And the competition's gone just fine.
Yeah. No, I'm in agreement. Like you're either buying into the franchise flavour, which is open market, best players.
Yep.
And then you got to find a way to kind of support a team. You don't. And I mean, in many respects, that's why every time we talk about the IPL, we talk about players. Mm. We don't talk about teams.
Just before you come out with any other hot takes, Teddy, I just want to declare that I also think Virat Kohli is the greatest white ball batsman we've ever seen. So I don't want you to come forward and sort of throw that out there as if it's you know, something else we haven't heard before. So I just... I am on board that before you say that next week, and I'd have to
just fall over myself.
The BBL, a little closer to home. So Ash Gardner is going to continue as the captain of the Sydney Sixers. So we saw Rachel Haynes, who's the Sixers GM, say absolutely, she'll continue as captain. Each year we make a recommendation to our board around our leaders. She certainly did a fantastic job last year, and we'll be making that recommendation to our board that she continues. So that's the latest on that front from the WBBL programmer, who also have a new coach. Now, the reason for that is Matthew Mott, who was the Sydney Sixers women's coach, is now coaching the men's team. So transitions across there. I think if you listen to Ed Cowan talk about this a few weeks ago, that there were clues as they say that this might have been on the horizon.
the retrospective breadcrumbs, you reckon?
I wasn't shocked when that came through. And by the way, I'm pleased that that the new WBBL coach, a guy by the name of Peter Clark. So for people that aren't familiar with Peter's work, this is a guy that I think he coached for like a decade, University of Queensland in first grade cricket. He is also the New South Wales Breakers coach. Obviously, they had great success last year, not the ultimate success. But the most interesting part I find about his resume is the 8 years that he spent as the psychologist for the Australian women's team before really transitioned into full-time coaching. So cool resume to a guy that's been around high-performing cricket programs for a long period of time, and now he coaches in the WBBL.
Yeah, and doing both. So for clarity, Breakers and Sixers. And, you know, when he went through the process of the Breakers coaching interviews, you know, a lot of the stars of Australian cricket who, you know, worked with him in the Australian women's team were just absolutely rapt, because the problem with psychologists is they've had no experience in the sport that you're talking about. And so there are a couple of exceptions, and Peter is one of them, in that has played cricket, understands cricket, and he's a psychologist. Mm. And so he's quasi-batting coach, quasi, you know, this is with the Australian team, throwing balls. And when you're in the weeds with the player, you can get great outcomes, as opposed to the clinical psychologist, go talk to this person over here and you're in a white room, you know, trying to explain the game and the nuances, because they might work across sports. So to have the domain expertise and the mental skills is a really rare skill to have.
Yeah.
And the same could be said, you know, when I was in the test team, Michael Lloyd was around the team. And so, like Peter, club cricketer, knew the game and could get great outcomes, because understandably could have empathy for the role that you were playing. And so when you get these types, and they're rare, they can be wonderful coaches, and whether they become head coaches or not, but just to have them around the team is awesome. And he did a phenomenal job with the Breakers last year. They obviously fell over at the last hurdle, but were the dominant team of the season. And so he's taken the program, which was strong, to new heights.
It's awesome. It's a fascinating moment in time too, about, you know, what it could look like going forward, as you said. And it's sort of, rather than just absolute expertise when it comes to, and you will have other coaches, and I'm sure Peter will have other coaches there that'll support him in various areas, but to have a head coach that's so skilled in that particular area, the way things are going in pro sport, it's a fascinating as I said, moment to see whether that carries on in other sports, or whether it becomes a trend, is what I'm trying to get to. ABC Cricket Podcast at abc.net.au is the email address. A shout out firstly to everyone that gets in touch with us. We got a boatload of emails. I think we're a little surprised just how many we're getting. So appreciate that. Chris, Raymond, Tom, Joe, Oscar, Alistair, Hugh, we've got all these different messages that we've had on a heap of different things. We can't get to absolutely everything, but love your passion, and I appreciate all the emails that we get. Keep trying, keep sending some stuff through, and we'll get to them as we work our way through the backlog. Roger, with the retirement of Stokes, I was thinking about who is the best all-rounder captain. Imran Khan, Kapil Dev, Sean Pollock, a few that stand out. Richie Beno ranks up there.
I don't know. Hard to look past Imran Khan. Was Sean Pollock an all-rounder, or was he a bowler who batted well? This is the terminal debate is around all-rounders versus highly skilled cricketers who can do more than one skill but obviously have a dominant skill. Mm. What do you think Ben Stokes' dominant skill was?
He's batting.
Interesting.
Yeah, you don't think so? Like when you're in 30 years' time, someone says to you, hey, Ed, what was Ben Stokes like? You'll say, he bowled wholeheartedly and charged down. He's still a batsman, isn't he? His more memorable moments will come with the bat.
I think you're right. And maybe you weight them. I'm probably 60-40 that way.
Mm.
And Sean Pollock, I was probably 70-30. And Steve Waugh was probably 85 batting, 15 bowling. So this is a tricky question. Yeah.
We mentioned Sir Garfield Sobers as part of that. He captained the West Indies on 39 occasions. I just looked it up. So it feels like whenever the question's cricket,
he takes the cake.
Yeah. If the question's cricket, the answer's Sobers. And it feels like, particularly in the all-round stakes, it's going to be hard to beat. All right, Adam, I've always been impressed by the support of Cricket Australia and Vic Cricket for women's cricket and into girls' junior pathways. It's meant I've always purchased a WBBL BBL membership for my daughter. However, when the invoice arrived this week, I'm wondering, what is the point? Am I being churlish not signing her up again? From Adam.
I think that's a comment dressed up as a question, isn't it?
Well, this opinion for you. Is he being churlish?
I don't think he's being churlish. I think he's being reasonable to understand that the rug has been pulled out of his fandom.
Yeah.
So maybe I view it as comment rather than question, because it's easier for him to describe my emotion rather than me describe it.
Should also be a bit of an insight for Cricket Victoria that's an email we get from Adam. I wonder how many people feel that way about exactly what's happened.
Yeah.
From Amon, after India's disappointing T20 games in England and Ireland, do you think the BCCI's long-standing policy of preventing contracted Indian players participating in overseas T20 leagues is proving counterintuitive? This is an interesting point, given the fact that, their guys, apart from international cricket, do not play T20 cricket anywhere apart from on home soil.
Yeah, I think the balance of the player development over the the dollars. I know which wins out in the BCCI's mind there. So I think it's a valid point that he raises without doubt. And increasingly, though, World Cups are going to be played in the Southern Asia, occasionally around the world. And so what's the cost benefit analysis on this? I think the benefit to the BCCI far outweigh the costs.
Hmm. If you said to the BCCI, you can't win a global title in 20 years, but the IPL keeps going up and to the right, what do you reckon they'd take?
Great question.
You could argue it's already cricket's number one product, the IPL. And yet,
it's not going to be overtaken.
It's not going anywhere.
And so maybe from a jingoistic point of view, probably the 20-year drought on world trophies.
Yeah, and keeps your product going strong. I think the preference is clearly to maintain their asset is what they got, which I could understand. Yeah.
You're taking the other side. I'm saying that they would
happily fold, or that they would happily for the IPL to go backwards if it meant they could have success on the global stage. Is that what you're saying?
I think so.
This is the point we're at. It's a weird hypothetical. It wasn't framed the way I probably could have done better there. From Jamie, 2 weeks ago, idea to help overrates in Test cricket, introduce a T20 style fielding restrictions towards the end of the day. It would help keep the crowds around too. Jamie also has an idea to send the two state teams to the US to play a shield game there. What would be the benefit of having a shield game in the US? Does anyone in America want to see that? People in Australia don't want to see
sidebar, that. They still reckon the Australia A tour to Los Angeles to play India A was the greatest cricket tour they ever took place. The wickets were diabolical. I mean, this is way back in the day, late 90s. Wickets were diabolical. More fun was had on those tours than every other tour put together.
What do you reckon about fielding restrictions late in the day in Test cricket?
But what can does you that imagine? Mean? More people around the bat? I'm unsure what fielding restrictions.
Well, basically more in the ring, I think, less on the boundary.
Yeah, but no, there aren't many people in the boundary anyway.
I was going to say it's a tough sell. And imagine the traditionalists when that comes in. Kerry says, what happened to the Alan Border medal this year? It's late July.
The actual medal or the function?
Well, the function's unfortunately, gone the way of the dodo.
Yeah, and the reason the function kind of got scrapped, aside from the cost, is increasingly between the IPL and the international season effectively finishes, after the Sydney Test. You can't imagine that ODI cricket's going to take place in January. And so players are everywhere, and so it's not much of a function without the players. This particular year, maybe no more, I think they awarded the Belinda Clark medal.
Yeah.
They awarded all the other players of the year, but the Alan Border medal's been held over to August, maybe?
Right.
From memory.
So Sutherland won the Clark medal, didn't she?
Right. And so why they did that, I think it came down to player availability more broadly, as in no one could come because both the women and the men were playing.
Gee, you got a good memory. Yeah. I must admit, if they'd awarded it, I wouldn't have even, to be honest, remembered. And this is...
shows you how much...
Correct.
It's like how much it's in the psychology. Yeah, can you name the last five AB medalists?
No. And this is.
Can you name the last five Brownlow medalists?
Correct. Absolutely.
Okay, go for it. Just quickly on the spot.
So last year was Rao, then it was Cripps, then it was Neil, then it was Cripps again, then it was Neil again.
There you go.
Yeah.
So honestly, you've only got 11 players to choose from, and so. With the Australian team more broadly, Mitch Marsh, because he made a great speech. But aside from, I think that was 2 years ago now. Who won it last year? Travis Head, probably. Now I'm scratching my head before Mitch Marsh. Like, maybe it was Cummins, maybe it was Head, maybe it was Khawaja. Don't know. I mean, and it's hard to follow across formats. It's just, it was cricket trying to be AFL, and it doesn't work.
Yep. Shout out to Ollie Wines, who I missed. I just looked it up. He actually won in 2021. Neil won 2020. He's a nice guy. He'll forgive me. Don't worry about that. Back to the emails. Callan from WA, who's in Paris. Can Ed explain why England can't find a spinner through the county system? It feels like since Swan, there's been nothing.
There has been nothing. And that's not to say, one thing we know is spinners bloom late, and so maybe Bashir is going to be a great test spinner. As a reminder, he's effectively taken as many test wickets as Jofra Archer in effectively the same amount of tests. And so it's kind of hard to put your finger on him specifically and say he's going to be it or not it. But if you look back over the last 15 years, they haven't really produced a world-class spinner. So what goes into that? Well, more broadly, there's a trend in cricket that white ball skills are diverging so far away from red ball skills. And so there's an incentive for young players to maximize their white ball opportunities. And that is to the detriment of your skill set. And secondly is, you know, county cricket earlier in the year before the 100 kicks in, or the T20, you know, the white ball in the middle of the year, you don't want to be bowling spin in April in Nottingham, let me tell you.
Yep.
So there's probably only not even two months at the end of the year. There's six weeks at the end of the year and 3 weeks before the white ball kicks off when spinners become effective. And so they just don't do the bowling. And so what do they try and do? They try and learn how to dart the ball in and maximize contracts. And there's no incentive. And you could say the same a little bit has impacted Australia.
100%. And then what? Once every
I don't think it's unique to England.
And then once every 4 years, we're looking in the cupboard going, where's all our spinning options to take to India?
Yeah. At least I think we've done a better job in bringing some spinners through and the encouragement, whether it's Rocchioli or Kooneman, Swepson.
But we
also have a concentrated talent base. We've got six teams.
Yeah.
So it's easier to do that. So, I mean, it's interesting, but I don't think England are necessarily flying solo here.
Yeah. And I think this coaching group in particular has done a pretty good job at keeping in mind the India tour coming up and every opportunity they get to try and blood some of these guys. So it's not so sudden every 4 years that all of a sudden that becomes our focus, because history tells you it's a really tough place for Australian teams to go and win. So if this generation, for all they've achieved, are part of that, that is something they haven't done, and it's something that very few teams in history can say that they have achieved to win a test series there. So, all of that. That's it. Richard says, you guys miss shouting out Moses Enriquez, 21-year career, great contributor and leader for New South Wales and Australian cricket. I thought we mentioned he was going to go play for Portugal in the T20s coming up, but, hats off to Moses Enriquez.
I was lucky enough to speak at the Steve Waugh Medal when he was a triple centurion, so 100 first-class games for New South Wales, 100 one-day games and 100 T20 games, which that phenomenal achievement.
Mm.
One of my great friends, a phenomenal cricketer. Could he have had a better international career? Perhaps, but there was a bloke called Shane Watson that kind of was in his way. Again, you know, when we're talking about all-rounders, dominant skills, you know, his body probably let him down at times with the ball, but a phenomenal captain, great leader, great human. Domestic cricket's worse off for him not playing anymore.
Hear, hear. Absolutely. Teddy, appreciate the hit out. We got more emails we'll get to next week, I promise. Keep them coming through. We'll pick out the best ones and we'll read them out and have a conversation around them. If you've got an interesting debate point for us, the email address is also in the show notes. Have a good week, Teddy. Chat to you next.
Thanks, Corb.